Where to start a testimony? Well, the first thing, I suppose, I heard my wife was out last night and Roger announced that we'd somebody older giving a testimony tonight. So, that is it. Where to start a testimony? At the beginning, I was born in 1974. Now, I can see Colin Gibson's face there, and he's absolutely shocked that I'm that age. I'm telling you. I was the second oldest of six children. I was born into a home in County Fermanagh, a little village called Clabby, outside Five Mile Town, for any of you who don't know where that is. I can't believe there is anybody who doesn't, but small little village that was about 12 miles from Enniskillen and 16 miles from Omagh. And to give it a sort of a local parallel, it would be quite similar when I was growing up to Drumadraw. Well, the first time I seen Drumadraw, I thought, this is Clabby on the north coast. Same decorations, midsummer as well. And because of that, during the Troubles, Clabby was a haven for security forces. It was sandwiched between several big security force bases, and we had a building explosion in the 80s, you could say, as all the police and UDR and whoever else had an important job in the security forces picked Clabby and Five Mile Town area as their residence. So we were completely surrounded in no time at all by security forces. You couldn't put your nose out, but you'd have been reported. But I had the great privilege of being born into a Christian home, and from a very, very earliest memories, we went along to Clocker Valley Free Presbyterian Church. We didn't just go there, we were sent to the children's meetings, CEF meetings. There was a lady up the road, she ran CEF meetings, my aunt ran CEF meetings. Faith Mission, if they come into the area, we went to the Faith Mission as well. The Independent Methodist Church, they would have had a wee portable hall and they seemed to share it with the Faith Mission. And just when the Faith Mission would go, the Independent Methodist would come in. And then there was a fellow, another man associated with the Independent Methodist Church as well, a guy called Willie Honeyman, a famous evangelist in the west of the province. And he would have landed in the area and preached as well. So we were well missioned in Clabby, I can assure you. And we went to every one of them. You didn't get a choice. You were marched out round to every mission that ever come about the place. The thing about it was, with all of those missions in Clabby, there wasn't very many Christians. And I suppose looking back, that's why they had so many missions. You know, there was several big families, and while we grew up with them, they had absolutely no form of godliness. For a rural area in that time, you know, all those years ago, very, very few went to church. Very few went ever near a church, apart from when they were getting buried, I suppose. And because of that, my parents kept us from a lot of the participating in a lot of what went on in the Orange Hall, the Water Run bazaars and all sorts of other things. And we were never involved in the youth clubs, the bazaars, the football, none of that. We were kept out of that. When I got to school age, I was sent along to Temple Primary. Again, it's only 4 miles in the road. And again, watched over there, my aunt and my cousin were teachers in that place. So you could do nothing but it was reported home. But from my earliest memory, and I don't have a memory without this, I knew I needed to be saved. I knew I needed to be saved. That was just it. There was not a question. And at the age of 8 years old, one of these regular missions came to the local area, and there was an evangelist, I'm sure the older folk will have heard of, Independent Methodist minister years ago called Reverend Tom Cross. Tom Cross had a son called Billy Cross, and Billy Cross conducted a mission literally about 50 yards from our house. We were in there one Sunday afternoon, and I remember Billy Cross was thumping out the gospel, and he preached on Christ issuing the invitation, and what if you should refuse Christ's invitation? Well, I was greatly troubled about that, and I went home, and the custom in our house was you got your dinner on Sunday, a Sunday afternoon meeting somewhere, most likely, then off to visit my granny, and then off to church. Clocker Valley Church was quite late in those days. We had an 8 p.m. start, and most people didn't arrive till 8:15. It hadn't changed much by the time you got there, Malcolm. So, I remember going to my granny's that afternoon and being greatly troubled, absolutely desperately troubled about my soul's salvation. I went home that night and I couldn't sleep. And in the middle of the night, I remember going into my parents' room and they pointed me to the Lord. Now, I remember a great burden lifted that night, immediately a great burden lifted. But in the days after that, I remember a great burden as to how am I going to keep this. All the time checking myself. Unbelievable burden. And it took me a while to get used to that. Again, like most people who give their testimony, primary school wasn't a problem. But in 1985, I went to Five Mile Town High School. Five Mile Town High School was a wee bit of a strange school in comparison to what's up here, in that because we were quite a distance from Enniskillen and Oma, and transport wasn't good, and people weren't keen on their children hanging around those towns in the evenings because of bombs and one thing or another in them days, you just went to the nearest school. So we were all pushed into the high school. And you could have done as well as you wanted there, or as little as you wanted. And of course, I'd done the latter. There was other Christians from the church, Clocker Valley Church, in that school, but it wasn't an easy place to be a Christian, and it certainly wasn't an easy place to be a Free Presbyterian. We got called everything, and I mean everything. And it was relentless, and the bus we used to go home on in the evening was the bus that went into the Fermanagh side. There was the Fermanagh side and the Clocker Valley side. The Clocker Valley side would have had the Free Presbyterians, but we went on the Fermanagh buses, and they were particularly anti-Free Presbyterians. So you'd have heard your name with all sorts of other descriptive terms associated with it, roared up the bus, and you'd have been oranges thrown at you and everything, but we got through it. And sometimes the language and the behaviour in those buses was horrendous. You know, when my kids come home and tell me some of the things that goes on the bus today, it's actually quite tame for by what we put up with. Another milestone in my life was 1988. My uncle had an accident. He owned a farm. He had about 200 head of cattle. He was typical work, get up in the morning and work, and when he goes to bed at night, that's the end of the work, and done nothing else. 365 days a year, that was him. He had no family. It was a hill farm. They were all wintered out, and it was just, it was only me and my brother helped him, really. He had another man help him, but he was killed in an accident. And then shortly after, my uncle had this accident where he fell into a slurry tank, and he had to be airlifted to the Royal Hospital in Belfast to have operations on his brain to remove some clotting. And really, he was out of action for the best part of 2 years. There went a lot of prayer up for my uncle. He wasn't saved, and I remember the phone calls at night. They'd be phoning around, and the Free Presbyterians, the Independent Methodists, the Faith Mission, all of the Christians in the area were phoning, and there was a lot of prayer went up for that man. And to the amazement of the surgeons in the Royal that time, he survived. His injury was so severe that he was actually operated on the military wing in the neurosurgery department of the Royal Hospital. And it was actually a military surgeon that helped on the operation, who was normally dealing with soldiers who had bullet wounds to the head or whatever. And that man survived and was back, well, not full strength, but almost full strength within 2 years. And he often told it himself, even though he wasn't saved, that there was a lot of prayer went up for him. He did get saved before his death, but that was another 9 years later. That accident happened at the beginning of my fourth year. That was the greatest excuse I needed to do even less at school than I was doing before. I just went farming full-time, one could say, and we grew up very fast. I went farming before school, I went farming after school, evenings, weekends, and my interests at that stage were farming and football. And I suppose with that level of responsibility, myself and my brother were doing most of the farming. My father would drop us off. There was a Land Rover there. Drove it wherever you needed to go. And occasionally the police would pull you in and say, you know, you shouldn't really be doing that, but that's as far as it went, really. We took liberties. We definitely did. The shotgun was left on the farm, and at the age of 14, we were using it for more than vermin control. It was sporting purposes and all sorts. But we were treated like adults, and we behaved like adults. But, you know, given a 14-year-old, that degree of liberty has its consequences. And I started to like my liberty. My schoolwork definitely suffered. I got through my GCSEs okay, but my A-levels were completely fluffed. GCSEs were not so much of a challenge, but the A-levels definitely caught me out. Farming was hard work, but I enjoyed it, and the financial reward wasn't very great. So I thought to myself, at the age of 16, I have to get another job here. 1990, I started work with an engineering firm, so I'd farm in the morning, engineering from 8 to half 5, and then farm again in the evening. And it was an engine reconditioning business, and I loved it, absolutely loved it. But the company in there wasn't great. They were very friendly, they were very helpful, I learned a lot from them, but it wasn't good company. The thing about it was, the guys that were in it, there was at least three of them, were second generation Free Presbyterians. They were at heart good fellas, they looked after me very well. But off we'd go to rallies, and while I wasn't taking drink, they would have been drunk, and we'd have been following the rally at breakneck speeds, and these guys would have been tanked up. And I look back and I thank God for his preserving hand upon us, you know, because there was many times we did well to get home. I can say it like that. In my personal life, I was very much losing interest in the Christian life and church. My focus, I'd say, was just on working and football. Because it fluffed my A-levels, I had no idea what I was going to do when I was at school. I wanted to do something in engineering, but I had no plan. I'd come the end of school, I thought, well, I'd get a job somewhere. But it was Fermanagh, and there wasn't very much around our area, I can assure you, in them days. So reluctantly, I looked for some sort of course in Belfast. I started with an engineer in HND. And the first thing I remember distinctly about Belfast was how bored I was. Oh, I had all this free time, and I had so much free time, I didn't know what to do with myself. I remember I used to take out and walk around Belfast and head away off just on long walks and way up the Craigie Road. And at that stage, I lived at the bottom of the village. We just walked all over Belfast. In hindsight, it was madness, but it passed the time. It wasn't long, though, before I was filling my spare time, and I definitely wasn't filling it by going to meetings. I had Christian friends in Belfast. I even shared a house with my sister, but she was only there 3 days a week. She'd learn English, and they sort of turn up an odd day, you know. It's not really a course, I think. Well, we pretty much lived separate lives. And what happened was, I'm not going into details, but my decline was rapid. It went much further than I ever thought it could go. I got away, very far away from the Lord, and got into a pattern of life that was, I'd never thought was possible. However, through this time, conviction about the way I was living rarely left me. Rarely left me, and particularly when I'd come home at the weekend, I'd be racked with conviction. I was suffering sadness all the time in the aftermath, and a horrendous sadness, and really couldn't stand the thought of how I was letting my parents down. I always had a lot of respect for my parents and my family. They looked after me well, and I couldn't stand the way I was behaving. Couldn't live with myself after the event, and I never wanted to bring shame on my family, so I kept this other life pretty much in Belfast. I remember several attempts to correct it myself, but I failed. They were half-hearted attempts. But through time, and with a loving and praying family, God did deal with me. And I thank God through that time for good friends who would continue to keep contact with me, even though I would continue to refuse their invitations to meetings. Late in 1994, I returned home one weekend, and our church was having a gospel mission in the back car park in 5 Mile Town. The evangelist was the Reverend Wesley Graham. At that time, we used to have the two Wesleys who had taken missions around the country, Wesley Graham, Wesley Irwin. And I remember joking with Wesley on the way in about keeping it short. And, you know, when he got home, there could be something on TV or something. I can't remember what it was about. But that night, the Lord used Wesley Graham to speak to my heart very much. And in his sermon, he spoke about the story of David and cutting the skirt off Saul's garment. And he brought out the illustration, what has God cut out of your life? What can God cut from your life before you return to him? You know, working again the next morning, 4:30, I was up. I had, at that stage, got another wee job to drive a milk delivery lorry. And it started early in the morning, and I was heading out at 4:30. I hadn't slept all night. Heading out at 4:30 in the morning, I was absolutely tortured that whole day. And I got home in the evening. I couldn't wait to get that milk run finished that day. I got home in the afternoon, and I got on my face, and I prayed, and I prayed. And I got peace with God. But then the big challenge, I had to go back to university on the Monday. At this stage I was at university doing an engineering degree, got moved on to the degree. And I had to tell my friends. Some of them were absolutely astounded, some were shocked, but they respected me. And some of them, the usual story, oh, you'll never stick it. Got that too, everybody tells that, but I got it. But you know, the amazing thing was, I'd spent 2 to 3 years avoiding everybody that would invite me to a meeting. See, that Monday, I was looking for them, to see if I could get anybody that would take me to a meeting, sort of hoping that they'd bring around the conversation. Could I find them? Not anyway. But by the Tuesday, I was finding them, and I couldn't wait for the meetings to come around each week. And I was going to meetings Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night. And some of those meetings ran on a fortnight cycle, and I just loved getting to them meetings. Absolutely loved them. Through the university as well, at that time, I got to know a young lady from County Armagh. I suppose she had a similar story to me, but maybe Roger will invite her to give her testimony some night, so I'd say no more. And if we fast forward to 2000, we got married. Me and Joan got married. At that stage, I was working in Nacom Terrace Handling in Craigavon. I was working at Bill's Forklifts for the global market. And we decided we'd get married. She was doing her PhD in Coleraine. Oh, she was under too much pressure. She couldn't travel, the usual crying session, you know. So it was me who had to travel. And traveling to Portadown was not an option. I soon got fed up with that. It was horrendous, sitting in traffic every day. So I sought another job, got into Tycho in Ballymoney, and we settled in this area. And we settled in this church, and I thank God for this church. I have found a lot of good, faithful friends in this church, and I really love it. And this church and this congregation has been very good to us as a family. Very good to us as a family, and we thank God for it. Through life, we have known God's guidance. Tycho was not a good move. The place was getting wound down, the American owners were not investing in it, and although I learned on it, developed, but it was not a good move in that it wasn't really progression. I stuck it out for as long as I could, but after some time I decided I need to get out of this business, and there was an opportunity for mechanical engineers in a quarrying company, RJ Maxwell, local coal rail company. They were owned by a stage of a company in Dublin. And I really sought God's guidance in that. And I got scripture at that time and messages that were being preached over a period of about 6 months. This negotiation was going on. I was getting reaffirmed to me all the time that I should go and take up this position. And I had 4 really good years in quarrying. However, I did not, or nobody else, seen the recession coming in 2006. Everybody talks about the recession in 2007. It hit the material supply business in 2006. I was made redundant. What a gunk. From someone who had built their life around work, to all of a sudden being at home with nothing to do, my head nearly went away. It honestly did. It was probably one of the toughest times in my life, getting up every morning wondering, what am I going to do? And was filling in the job applications, etc. Everybody seemed to be going on holidays. You couldn't get a response to nothing. It was horrendous. Wrightbus offered me a job, but it was a considerable step back for me. I had some other potential offers. And I prayed long and hard about that. My heart was telling me go to Wrightbus. My head was saying not. I prayed long and hard, and it came to the day I had to make a decision. And I said, God, you've got to give me some verses. And I was reading in Matthew. And I was not expecting this, because there'd been nothing to indicate that this would be where I'd get my verse from. I was reading in Matthew chapter 6. I'll be able to see it now. Matthew chapter 6, verse 25, and I was thinking about, you know, there's financial implications for me taking this job. Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body what ye shall put on. Is not the life more than meat, and the body than raiment? And verse 26 really reinforces it. Behold the fowls of the air, for they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feedeth them. Are ye not much better than they? God took me to Wrightbus on those 2 verses. I absolutely loved it. And I was no time there until I was engineering, doing my job, and there was some problems with a supplier. I got involved with the supplier, sorted them out for him, and 9 years later I'm managing that business for him now. So God makes no mistakes. It didn't seem on paper like the right decision, but God's word led me in that direction. And I have to thank God for it. God has been a great help to us as a family through many trials. After Harry was born in 2002, he was very premature, he was very weak. He contracted bronchitis, and normally bronchitis isn't too sore in a child, but Harry got so weak. He got so weak that they let it run too far, where they were afraid to transfer him to the Royal in case he wouldn't make the journey. And God brings people to these situations for a reason. There was a doctor in, and he had been in America, and he commonly spoke to me and Joan, and he says, you know, I have been in America, and in extreme cases like this, they are now putting adrenaline through the oxygen mask. He said, it's not done in Northern Ireland. In fact, it's not done in the UK, but there's some clinical trials running on it. He says, are you willing to let this experiment? He says, it's very simple, and we give it the go-ahead. And I have to say, almost instant improvement, you know, within 4 hours. We'd been lying there for 11 days, and Harry was just fading away in front of her eyes. And it was amazing, really was amazing to see how much he responded to that treatment and how God brought him back. October 2005, Joan was expecting again. We decided to go to Glasgow for the weekend. I think she had some university work to do. I can't remember the reason, but we got there. And tragedy struck. We had to race to hospital. And there was a baby born, stillborn, around midterm or slightly before it. That was an exceptionally tough time. We had to bring that little baby home and bury it in Coleraine Churchyard. God help us through that time. But God has blessed us with two more children. Thomas, he's more difficult to manage than about four children. As anybody knows, had him. And Ruby. And God's help has carried us through. Even more recently, Simon had a relatively serious operation. I couldn't believe how smoothly it went. And I do thank you all for your prayers. And as I recount all these things, as I was preparing this testimony, one thing that comes to my mind is, if you're not saved here today, how do you get through without God's help? And how do you, a God that powerful, a God that's put this universe in its axis, a God that has done all this, how do you hope to avoid him on Judgment Day? How do you hope to be able to say to God, negotiate with him? There's going to be no negotiation. If you're not saved, as it's laid out in God's Word, you're going to hell. Thank you for listening.